Okay, good morning. I'd like to give a picture of a different kind of egg. I've talked about the philosophical egg as part of the soul. I'd like to expand that a little bit. I'd like to expand it a lot into the whole question of the life forces in a human, and how are they connected to my feelings and my sense of myself. In Rudolf Steiner's work, he calls the life forces etheric forces. And people believe that's an unfortunate choice of terms because it confuses people. It points people towards an old concept in science called the ethers. That's actually been discredited over the years. But Steiner's using ether in a very primal, ancient way, before modern science got a hold of the term ether. It was a well-established esoteric term for a long while. So he's just trying to connect up to the idea of what is an ether. And it's not the theoretical ethers of Michelson and Morley. It's a different idea. And it has to do with a concept in science known as the infinitely distant. We're going to work with that in the next couple of weeks when we do projective geometry. But the infinitely distant is an idea that has very ancient roots and since the late 1800s has been the focus of a lot of mathematical thinking. At Steiner's time, there was a lot of interest in what is known as the fourth dimension. In fact, there's a book, if you're interested in philosophy of science, there's a book called The Fourth Dimension, where Rudolf Steiner gives several lectures on fourth dimension. There's also what's known as the warmth course and the light course, where he brings certain anomalies in the scientific consciousness to the fore to say there are certain gaps in our understanding about the world. And if we want to try to understand what's going on in those gaps, we have to have a different point of view about where life comes from. In today's world, life comes somehow, Kurt Vonnegut, the author, said, the mud somehow gets up and talks.
So by the fourth dimension, you're not referring to time?
I'm referring to time and time, yes. So for Steiner, the ether, what he calls the ether body, can also be called the time body. It's a subtle sheath in us where cause and effect doesn't hold sway, but what's known as the causal realm. There is a time in which things are not sequential. Carl Jung talked about synchronicity. Many people had followed out of the work of Carl Jung. Were really fascinated by synchronicity because synchronicity was the tool whereby the ancient mystery teachers did their esoteric work. And if you live in a culture where synchronicity rules, you have a whole other way of understanding what causes what. You could call it magical thinking. If you're interested in that, there's a classic text called The Golden Bough by Sir James Frazer. It's about magic, divination, and synchronicity in the ancient world. It's about 3 inches thick, so give yourself a few weekends. But why I'm trying to couch this is because this is not just a simple issue. The whole question of life has not been solved by modern science, even with cloning. With cloning, the protoplasm of the cloned animal has the biological age of the parent. It's an illusion. The biological age of the cloned animal is the biological age of the parent animal, even when it is just first born. Google Dolly. Okay, so the human beings have not penetrated to the mystery of life. And it's because our vision is reductionist into the matter rather than where did the matter come from? How did the matter get there? And it's not necessarily a chicken-egg thing, because if it was chicken-egg, we'd have solved the problem with Dolly. But we didn't. We just solved a technical problem in cloning, but the real issue is still the same issue, life. So when we deal with life in a materialistic age or a cause and effect age that's driven by cause and effect, we try to prove life exists in a cause and effect way. But Steiner's picture, that is in line with the ancient mystery schools going back to the beginning of time, is that life is, and life on earth becomes. Life in the cosmos is. It is all life. So the life that is in me at this moment is communicating with the life in you. If the life in me were suddenly to be not present, that would be the end of the communication. Even though my organism that is supporting my life would still be here in the room, my life would not. And this goes all the way back to Plato, talked about watching a mother pig that was about to be killed for harvest, who was suckling piglets while she was being slaughtered. And as they were still suckling while she was dying, and then suddenly one of them got the picture that mom was not here anymore, even though her body was there. And in that instance, they all got the picture and ran away squealing. It was an observation of life. So that the life that we think is somehow connected to my flesh is connected to it, but is not synonymous with it. That's where I want to go today. And when we start to think about life, when we start to think about ether, the ether body, we have to think of time in a different way, rather than this and this and this and this and this and this, all in a line. Because in the ancient world, if two things happened in the same time frame, they were linked synchronistically in a magical way with great import. Two things happened synchronistically. It was understood that there was a doorway in time into another dimensionality of life. That ruled the ancient world, that point of view. It's a famous story about the five generals, Chinese generals, and the emperor called his generals together, and they were about to go into a big battle. And so the seven generals. So the emperor said, I want you to all to say whether you think we should attack or not. And four of the generals said, don't attack. And three of the generals said, attack. So what did the emperor do? The emperor attacked and won. Why did the emperor attack when four said, don't attack, and three said, attack? Because in that culture, three was a much more auspicious number than four. It was not about nuts and bolts and adding things together. It was about this other dimension where one thing may happen synchronously to another. They are said to be causally related, but not in a cause and effect way. That type of thinking is etheric. So the ether body the body of the life forces in a human is a time body that exists in my life as a regulator and a modifier and a harmonizer for things that happen emotionally and physically in my life. So if you cut your finger, you don't have to spend all your time thinking, heal, 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 heal. There's something that in your life body that takes the event and moves it rhythmically through time to a particular end, creates a continuity in time that we say life does that. Life heals. Because it, well, I know you cut yourself, but wait a while and it will be better. That's a different view of time than, oh, I cut myself, who's to blame? Ether body doesn't care who's to blame because it lives in a different time frame. The astral body cares who's to blame, but the ether body doesn't.
You could get gangrene and die.
You get gangrene when your astral body is not harmonized. And if it's harmonized, it allows your ether body to do what it needs to do. And it can be so strong that you cut your finger off and you still have the experience of touch in your finger. That's called phantom limb. That's because your ether body is still present. What we call healing and spontaneous remission and all this kind of stuff that no one can understand. Or even just placebo effect in medicine. What is a placebo?
Sugar cube.
You know, drugs that are made today have a certain bar that they have to get above, and the bar they have to get above is placebo, which is 20% effectiveness. If a new drug can't get above 20% effectiveness, it's not considered valid. So something where there is no drug whatsoever is where the bar is. Think about it. So next time you get sick, ask how much your emotional life is contributing to your sickness and see what the answer is. And then track your sickness back to an emotional event and meditate on what is eternal and what is temporal. Give yourself a job. And then see how you feel about your sickness, about the illness. So when we wish to heal ourselves, skepticism, anger, and blame are the worst poisons we can have. If we don't wish to heal ourselves, then there's blame. But if we wish to heal ourselves, we have to make a medicine out of the blame. And to do that means I have to learn to contact my life forces in such a way that they're not alien to me, but I actually have a technology, an inner technology, where I can marshal them and utilize them. How can I make them more effective? How can I allow them to move in my life so that my sense of time is not that I'm in a prison of my own belief, or my own anger, or my own skepticism, or my own loneliness, or my own alienation? How can I free myself from that? So the life body, or the, we could say the consciousness of the life body, is given to us as a gift for healing. It's the thing that creates all the patterns of my life forces in my organs. I don't do that. If I did, they'd be much more of a mess than they already are. Because I'm too busy doing other things. So in your body, you have a consciousness of great benefit to you that you do not produce. It's a gift. It's given to you freely by the cosmos. And the question is, can I honor it and understand it, or do I have to continually reject it? So if I wish to change something in my life, I need to come in contact with a type of thinking that allows my life body to flourish. And the type of thinking that was present in the mystery schools in the past, and that Steiner spent years trying to say this could help, is pictorial thinking, rather than abstract thinking, rather than cause and effect thinking. Because in cause and effect, I always end up with just the answer. But in pictorial thinking, I get much closer to the question. The question will take me much further in my healing than the answer, because the answer is only relative and temporal. So if I wish to start to change my life, have metanoia, I need to do something to my thinking that always expects that there's going to be an answer at the end of my contemplations. I have to enter into a realm where I open up time rather than restrict it. And I can give myself more time. Or I could say, not more time, but a better quality time. Because there are qualities of time. There's the time when you're bored and the time when you're enthused. Same time, isn't it? By our watches. But very different time in terms of soul force. And it's that relationship between the soul force and the life body. Last time when I talked about the philosophical egg, I talked about the sentient soul, but the sentient soul, the lower part of the egg, has an interface with the life body. That's called the sentient body, S-E-N-T-I-E-N-T. And the sentient body is a part of my soul that is so deep in my unconscious that it's very difficult for me to touch it rationally, logically, but it's present to monitor all the experiences that my life body is having as I go through the world and have sense impressions. Part of my consciousness is designated to be aware of how much life is in my limb or my head or my lip or my foot and how much life is not. It's just a monitoring consciousness. That's how you know when you're cut. That's how your body knows to go into shock if you have trauma. You don't say, oh, I think I'm going to go into shock. It just happens. How does it happen? It's a particular consciousness. We take it totally for granted because it just happens. But it's quite a miracle. So as we start to try to understand this, and we pull the pieces out, we say, oh my God, I'm healing. In the ancient world, there was a mantra. Eating is illness. Eating is sickness. As soon as you eat, you disturb the whole balance. And then your life body has to bring it back again. That's the way they looked at it. Okay, so every sense impression you have is causing your life body to come and meet it and match it. If there was a big red light up here and it shined it for a while and then you closed your eyes, you would see inside you a green light. And that green light is exactly the opposite of the chroma and the hue and the value and the temperature of the light that was shining. Exactly. You can do experiments with that. That means that you have a part of your whole neurology that is set to balance every single touch, smell, taste, hearing, impression that comes in, to balance it and harmonize it so every sense impression doesn't drive you up the wall. That's your life body. And somebody's taking care of it, but it's not you. And every once in a while it gives you a signal that maybe you should be taking care of it, and that's called illness. So I'm saying it this way so that we can see that our preconceptions about what my physical body is and the life forces It's just mix and mash, shake and bake, the consciousness we have today. Shake and bake. Put a pill in, it'll be better tomorrow. But it's the more pills we put in, then the more pills we have to put in. If I wish to experience my life force, I have to change the way I think about the world. I have to change my cause and effect thinking. And I have to begin to have inner pictures that are continually arising up in me as patterns. So if I take 5 parts per million of adrenaline and I put a drop of it down in an artery in my foot, immediately in my whole system, I'm on hyper alert, run, throw up, defecate, lungs start pumping and heart moving, and none of it is under my day awake consciousness. None of it. I am unfolding all kinds of patterns over which I have no control whatsoever. What is that? That's the life body. Because hidden in the life body are these patterns that have been put in since time immemorial to maintain the organism. And they are patterns. They're not random things. And because they're patterns, it means there must be some form of intelligence that has guided them into place. The esoteric schools would say that form of intelligence is the mind of the creator, so that organisms can maintain themselves. Whether it's a planarian or whatever, the same type of patterns happen, earthworm, bee, whatever. So where does that adrenaline come from? It comes as a response to a stimulus. And the stimulus usually is some type of sense impression in the nerve. And the sense impression is fired along the nerve until it comes into contact with a place where it can interface with the blood. And over time, those places where the nerve interfaces with the blood in order to balance sense impressions have evolved into what are known in physiology as a gland. A gland is an organ that is a particular area in the body where a nerve impulse and a vascular structure come into intimate contact, vascular, circulatory, blood. And when they come into intimate contact, every time the nerve fires, the blood side, the vascular side of the gland responds in kind, exactly balancing whatever the nerve impulse is. And that pattern of the response, we call it adrenaline, melatonin, progesterone, testosterone, thyroid hormones. Adrenaline is a codified activity, highly organized activity that has become a substance. When I take the substance, the consciousness of my life body overrules my soul and says, run away, throw up. And it's not me deciding to do it. So I would ask you, where is that consciousness that's happening? That consciousness is the consciousness of the life body that's present at every moment for every sense impression since we've come out of our mothers. It's the way your life forces are regulated all the time. Every sense impression has its secretion. Some stronger, some less. But if you took the patterns of energy of all the secretions at any given moment, and you could somehow peel them out and organize them, you would have a subtle body of movements. That's the life body. patterns, charges, if you will, that are organized and not random, and quite intelligent. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. So the life body in the human is receiving the sense impressions, and the soul has to make sense out of those stimulus response patterns somehow. You're driving down the freeway and a truck pulls in and suddenly you got adrenaline going on in your system. And then your soul comes in and goes, whoa, that was close. Okay, you don't have to, you know, okay, calm down. Now your soul's engaged in a conscious way because your body is running according to the program of the beings who created it in order to maintain the integrity of your organism. And you have to deal with it. So if you ask a healer what happens after the adrenaline goes into your body, the adrenaline actually turns into a kind of toxin, and a great deal of lactic acid causes your muscles to turn into a kind of hard starch. So if you ever have an adrenaline thing light off, drink a lot of water and go for a run to burn up the adrenaline, or it's next morning you're going to be sore. Like patterns. Are they random patterns? No, they're not random patterns. Why are they not random? That is the big question. Where are they not random? That's an even bigger question. Why is it after I have an event, there is a certain time frame to allow stuff to happen? That's another question. What is a fever curve in illness? That's another question. What is the evolution of a cold and fever? That's another question. Why is it that a year after a heart operation, when the moon gets back to the place where the heart was violated, there's often atrial fibrillation? That's another question. What is ischemic response? That's another question, if you know what that is. Ischemic response, rhythmic response in the circulation. So if you have a heart operation, now what they do is they put a little catheter in with a balloon. Before you have the operation, they blow up the balloon and isolate the heart from a blood supply. And they hold it for a few seconds, and then they let it go. And then they wait. And then rhythmically, they pump up the balloon again and hold it for a little bit longer. And then they wait, and then they let it go, and then they pump up the balloon, they hold it a little longer. And they're trying to train your heart for post-op. And they find that if they do ischemic response exercises before they do the operation, that after the operation, when your heart has an event, it doesn't totally go flatline because it has memories of the ischemic response training when it didn't have a full blood supply. What's having the memory? Where is the memory? What is this? I talked to a doctor in Ann Arbor years ago who was one of the leading doctors who was beginning the research at the university in ischemic response with dogs, and they got dogs up to like no blood supply for like hours. Training the system to do without the heart, without a blood supply, and then when they let it go, it's back in the ball game again. But that's a dog. He said some dogs have kind of a talent for it. Don't try this at home, kids. You know. I'll bet it was a lab, right? Yeah, the purer the heart. Yeah. So, what is this?
So that must be the same thing. Is that the same thing that where people don't need to eat anymore?
Uh huh. That's where we're going a little bit. That's okay. Because that's these. How can it be that people don't need to eat anymore, and they don't lose weight? I mean, hello. What is that? Is that just kind of whatever? Or is it pointing at something? It's pointing at the fact that most of the mysteries of life, we don't have a clue. So the question about life is that it can't, we can't put our finger on it and say, this is what it is. Because as soon as we do, our consciousness of doing that changes it into something else. So in order to deal with it, in order to practice, we have to surrender to the way life operates. And that is through these moving pictures. We want to get a sense of how the pictures move. And it's no mystery to me why the biggest attack on humans today is in their capacity to control the inner pictures that move. Because we're given a constant supply of outer pictures that move, which means we don't have to pay attention to the fact of how the inner pictures move. This is, in my understanding, this is the great deception. And it's not about don't go to films. My son's an animator for Pixar, so I understand the issue. Yeah, we talk about it a lot, about CG and the implications of it, computer-generated images, and the implications of the inner picturing process. That's the life body. Normally, in my inner life, when I have an inner picture, the inner picture falls into a thought. And then I grab the thought rather than the process of the picturing and go, this is what it is. But when I do, I lose contact with the process of how the picture arises. And it's in my contact with how the picture arises that I can find ways to heal the way the picture arises. If I don't realize there's an inner picture arising, there's no way I can heal it. Think about it. If all I do is cleverly arrange the corpses on the battlefield, then I'm an innovator. Look up innovation in the dictionary. It's the clever arrangement of things I already know. It is almost the opposite of creativity. So if I wish to heal myself, I have to think creatively rather than innovatively. I have to enter into places where I have no knowing and be able to live there without blame. But no one can give that to me or help me to do it. I have to do it myself by taking up my bed and walking. Meaning I have to pay attention to my own inner picture-making process, especially around issues. And when I start to pay attention to the pictures around issues, I start to see the way they move. When I see the way they move, I learn to move with them. And the crazy thing about the inner pictures is they are much more mobile than the fixed pictures that I get in my normal everyday life of thought. These inner pictures are continually flipping into polarities because it's the purpose of my life body is to balance everything that comes in by meeting with the exact opposite polarity. So when I try to grab one and fix on it, immediately it's something else because there's a differential there. It's becoming different just by me trying to grab it. So rather than trying to grab it and say, this is the answer, I have to train my thinking to surf with it and see how that feels. And out of that, there's no answer. But there is activity. And that activity changes the configuration of my life body. That's when I start to heal. A healer is just the person that can harmonize their life body with the life body of the other person. They have an intuition on how to do that. Okay? So these are what we could call mysteries of the life body. Yes, it's possible to have too much etheric. Then I become dull. And the reason why is because if I have too much etheric, I'm continually my own day consciousness is continually being overrun by pictures that are rising up out of my life forces. It's possible to do that. My son, who is the animator when he was in the Waldorf school, was a big-headed, total dreamer. And we were so, he could, sometimes it was like Earth to Noah, you know. Can you come in for 10 minutes here? Wonderful, beautiful heart, sweetest guy you'd ever want to know. Can rely on him forever, but couldn't spell his name. He was in the sixth grade, hardly. So we were concerned. So we went to a doctor, and the doctor said, we'll probably have to give him an injection of homeopathic lead to shock the system to get him to come down. And the only place we could get it because of drug laws in the U.S. was in Europe. We had to kind of, you know, under the radar with the homeopathic lead. And so we ordered it from Europe, and we're waiting and waiting. And then one day, he woke up, and he was like, I'm here. Okay, I'm here. That day, we got a call from the doctor. The medicine just came in. We'll give him the injection.
And did you do it?
No, we didn't do it. We already did it. All his soul had to do was go, no, no, not the lead. I'll go, I'll come in. I'll come in. Okay, all right. Yeah? That day. I mean, my wife and I looked at one another and went, whoa. So who was, you know? Who was there? And now he's threw his sentient body into sentient soul, and he's totally focused person. Yeah, so the question is always balance. My consciousness diminishes my life. My life heals what happens when I use my consciousness too much. I have to find in my life a balance. So when I'm trying to be totally aware, I'm using up life forces. This is why I have to eat and go to sleep. I wake up in the morning and I have to go to sleep. This is Prometheus with the eagle waking up every morning and coming eating his liver. His liver is his lifer, L-I, it lives. It's the liver, lifer. And the eagle is always thought. So every morning, the eagle comes and eats his liver. That happens in you every day. The eagle of your thought eats your life force. It consumes the glycogen that's stored in the evening. And then you have to go to sleep and replenish it. The eagle flies away. Prometheus still chained to the rock. Why is he chained to the rock? Because he stole fire. And gave it to humans. He stole fire from the gods. And they said, oh, you're going to have to pay for that one. So how did he pay? He had his life forces eaten by his consciousness. So do we. So in the evening when I go to sleep, my life forces and my physical body are hooked in such a way that when I go off wherever I go into dream world, if you want an experience of this, some night around 2 o'clock in the morning, just go out and take a walk and think of all the people laying comatose horizontally in the beds in the neighborhood. Just think about them all and think, what strange ritual is this? Who blew the whistle and said, I want all of you to get prone and comatose for 6 hours? Think if we said that to you, you go, I don't think so. And yet, there we go. Somebody blows the whistle. And then we're all somewhere else, aren't we? And then we come back and hopefully we have some new forces. Did you put an order in? Or are they just given to you? Where do they come from? Why do you have to be comatose in order to get them? Where do you go? How do you get back? These are the questions around the life body. So when my soul, with all its values and issues and blame and shame tapes and how many marbles do I have and all of that stuff, when that goes away and gets schooled, that's the dream. But my life body is present to receive then clearly forces of what are known as the forces of life from the periphery, from the infinitely distant. And here's a picture. So since the most ancient times, it was understood that humans are star beings who come here to learn stuff. The Native Americans on this continent said, we are star beings coming from other stars who are omnipotent and omniscient. But we come to Earth because we don't understand one thing. What we don't understand is limitation. So we come to Earth to experience limitation so we can overcome it through what the Native American church calls giveaway. So when I go to sleep, my life body becomes open because I'm in the school of learning giveaway. I've just given away my soul. And because I've given away my soul, what comes into it is new forces from the starry realms, from where I live as a human, where I go. So the ancient traditions always taught that the starry realms was the source of life. They're the source of the ongoing human, their spiritual existence. This is the zodiac, the animal wheel, where nature gets its forces. And through the gate of the zodiac come what was known in the ancient times as etheric forces, ether forces, life forces. So in a spiritual context, that's the source of life, not the mitochondria and the DNA. The DNA is an image of that. And the ether forces coming through the starry realms are just total chaos. They are what leads everything back into a spiritual condition after it lives here for a while. Everything goes back. The mountains will go back. They've gone back before. They will go back again. It's been recycled and recycled and recycled and recycled. So as things go back into the cosmos, there's new force that comes in all the time. But the force to get life to dissolve is the etheric force. It's what creates dissolving. But in me, in my body, if it was just dissolving, I wouldn't be here. So I need to have something else in me that doesn't dissolve. So I need to take those life forces that are just on the periphery and somehow make them into a form or a pattern or organize them somehow. And according to esoteric wisdom, that form is the role of the planetary realm, or what could be called the cosmic astral. So the forces here in the periphery are the cosmic etheric. And then they come through the gate of the planetary realms and become, instead of ether forces, become what Steiner called etheric formative forces. The ether forces themselves dissolve. The ether formative forces create patterns. What are the patterns? They're the movements, and if we could take a snapshot over the millennia of the energetic places where the within the band of planetary motion 23 and 20 north and 23 south, we'd have just total weaving of loops and boundary zones and gradients and energetic patterns. It would just be permeated with movement in time. Remember, it's a time body. In time, those movements are, they're present as a potential for the forming of loops. That whole area would be permeated by loops. Well, if you ask an anatomist what an organ is, it's just a bag in a bag. Get out Gray's Anatomy and look at a cross-section of the kidney. Bags in bags in bags in bags in bags in bags. Lung, bags in bags in bags in bags. Formative force. But then within me, I have my own little solar system made of bags in bags in bags. And then those bags and bags and bags, the fluids that move through those systems are making little replications of what's happening out there. If I took a picture with tracers of the movement of fluids in my kidney or in my heart, and then I made a movie of the retrograde and direct loops of the planets, I'd see exactly the same thing. And so the esotericist, the rule is, as above, so below, as below, so above. Meaning that something in me has a harmonic relationship to something out there through the form principle. So I have in me a little personal astral body, a little personal solar system, with my heart and my liver and my kidney and my lungs, that are using the patterns of life that are coming in and being formative that are within me. And the gift to me is that my organism has been structured by the beings who created the movements to begin with. And it's a gift to me, the most incredibly articulated vehicle. Just remarkable, and self-healing. The most remarkable thing. It's self-healing. Have your Prius do that. And then you have a big marketing edge. It is self-healing. No machine is self-healing. And the reason why it's self-healing is because the forces in it are replications of the forces out there that are constantly being upgraded at every moment, healing. And then within those organs and around those organs, here's just a particular organ, I have the actual physical part of the organs, like a sandbar in the river of my life, the stuff, the material. And then around that, I have a sheath of active forces through secretion, life forces, secretions. Great Paracelsus called those secretions dew, D-E-W. And now studies in physiology are showing that, as we saw with the boundaries of an organ are not boundaries. The phospholipids are activities. They're not even stuff anymore, according to biochemistry. The phospholipid boundary of your cell is an activity between two gradients. It's activity, movement, pattern, relationship, Do I have an ether space where all the boundaries are interacting with all the other boundaries, and then an astral space around that where my soul life says, this is me eating this or whatever. And then my organism has to work it out. Or not. And the place where that happens is called the sentient body. Sentient body. It's the space where my soul life, where I say, I am awake, meets the forces of my life where I am not awake. And says, I'm having an upset stomach. And that sentient body is developed at a particular time in human evolution to be incredibly sensitive. And we have a word for that. It's called adolescence. So during adolescence, the organism has reached a stage of maturity where the life body is starting to have to surrender to what the soul wants to do and the destiny of the soul. And the interface between the two is a very strong consciousness of how sensitive I am. And we call it adolescence, right? Okay, and as that space of the sentient body happens and events happen during that time, certain things get codified as beliefs. And then at 21, I move away from my sentient body period into my soul period, and I never get a chance to go back and unravel the dilemmas that I've created for myself in sentient body times. Ask any therapist when they're working with a person, and they have to go right back to the spot, and it's always mom and dad and whatever. Why? Why is that? Why can't we get past that? It's because biologically, we don't have an organ to go back and deal with that. So we have to build a soul organ that's aware, that can go back and deal with that and stand seeing the pattern. That's then the sentient soul. And the mind soul and the different aspects of soul go back into the sentient body and say, this is how it was. This is how it is. And what comes out of that place has been known since the very beginning of time as myth. Myth, Joseph Campbell said, a myth is an argument between two organs of the body.
Well.
Of course there's a fear barrier there, but that's where we're trying to say. We have to build an organ in our soul that can stand it. And we build that by building, feeding the life body pictures consciously. That's Adam and Eve and Psyche and Eros and Cain and Abel and whatever. We feed that through forming pictures and dissolving them and forming. I'm getting my life body to say, this is the way this picture moves. Then my life body goes, oh, okay, I think I understand that. And in my mind, I'm taking my life body and saying, I want to heal that force. But I can't heal it by telling it to be better. It's like telling your cat to be better. It doesn't work. So what do you have to do? You have to have a little treat. Come here, kitty. Go do this, kitty. And then after a week or two, the kitty knows that's where the treat is. Thank you. That's the way the kitties train us. So that's the way your life body trains you. This is Brother S of St. Francis. It's a life body. Brother S just keeps, it's a vehicle that keeps me moving. So my training in forming pictures and dissolving them and giving to my life body through my thinking process images that move in a lawful way allows me to incorporate the forces of my life body into the transformation of my soul body. I need to do that consciously. So the sentient, remember with the egg, the bottom was a sentient soul, subpersonality fragments. But below that is the source of the subpersonality fragments. That's the sentient body. And below that is the life body, where I have no control over my pictures whatsoever, unless I practice. And if I practice, I can enter into my life body, and an organ builds in my heart that becomes a way for me to feel how my life body is being impacted by my sense experience. Then the training of that is called art. So when I develop art, I'm developing a way for my soul and my life body to interact in a harmonious way.
If I can develop that kind of an organ, would that also entail I don't necessarily have to get sick anymore because it has that kind of an influence over it?
There's karma then of why, the karma of the sickness.
Okay.
But if I do this work, I can be sick, but I don't have to go into blame. Sometimes sickness is just a symptom that I'm going to the next level. This is, there's a, among healers, there's a mantra, it's called detox is retox. It's a healing crisis. But in order to understand that I'm having a healing crisis rather than I'm dying, I have to develop the organ of perception. Then I can stand the illness because I'm learning something from it. It may be that the illness is terminal. Then the question is, if it's terminal, can I use it to maintain dignity when I pass? Or do I have to go kicking and screaming, bitter and disillusioned? Because that has implications for future life.